Ah, hi, Ray.
I thought we meant to make the entrance. I didn't know that you are here.
Pardon?
Oh my god.
Pardon? What's wrong?
No, because I prefer to be here when I set things up, because I need to be... I'm responsible for this equipment, which is very expensive. And
okay. I didn't destroy anything.
Okay, so what have you done?
I just switched on the projector and I just connected the laptop. That's everything I did.
Okay, should I just show you that how it works, and what is your priority now?
Well, it just works. Put up there. So.
Yes, I understand, but I would like to show you that how other things work. And
what do you think you need?
No,
for
instance,
this is the light.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you
would like to increase the microphone, the volume.
I don't really need a microphone. I mean, it's not so many people, I think the voices, just do it.
Okay, anyway, so it works.
So, well, I just set up this room, the other rooms need to be set up. Also, we need, what I really need from you is a box for the donations. Money could,
yes,
people
can we have a look outside, please?
Yeah,
I've prepared a lot of things. I was here 7 o'clock. I've been waiting for you and I didn't see anyone. And then I came in the room and the people said that I don't know who is Stefan. And so, I don't know. I mean,
where did you wait?
I was waiting in my office because I can look down and
in
see.
In your office? Okay.
My office is just opposite, so I told you that in the opposite building. And so I can see who is there. And but anyway, and I would prefer that people
entered,
come in
we
with
entered,
the memory
we entered the building, so...
So the building is open.
Yeah, meanwhile, because when we get here first, the door was just closed. I mean, I think
that's
it was 7, 8:15.
Okay,
so
yeah, because they need to pay that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for the other two rooms, wouldn't it be easier if people just bring like memory stick and then use that PDF? Because, well, never mind, we'll see
what's your problem?
There is no problem, but it's just easier to set up and...
What? I actually don't know what you're talking about. Maybe you just can explain.
You know that you will need to spend time and to make sure that the laptop will work with the data projector.
Mm-hmm.
But it will be much easier if you just use the desktop and then just use the memory stick and then plug in the PowerPoint. If
you have a PowerPoint, well, I think most people will have their presentation on their own laptops. So
yeah,
it is
then they can save it as a PDF file.
Yeah, but that's additional effort.
It is not traditional effort. It just makes things much easier.
Well, it's much easier to just...
No, because sometimes people use Apple and then sometimes people use different computers and different computers might have different formats.
If this works, then others work as well.
Yeah, then let's hope that everyone will have such a good luck like you. Now,
yeah.
I really owed you...
I'm just setting up the room because this is the room we need first. This is the checklist for the opening. You will start with the opening?
No, I will not.
You
will tell people that where the emergency exit is, and then you should tell people that
they shouldn't bring
food. There's no food, no drink in the room. And and then you should tell people that they have only got 1 hour.
What I really need from you is a box for the donations, something where people can put money in. Can you provide this, please?
Yes.
Okay,
as I
wonderful.
Say that, I would like to show you the box I brought because I don't know that it's okay with your standard or not.
Okay.
I'm going to read the Thank you. And we don't present the P2P Foundation on Nukemix, or we do?
We do.
Oh, right.
Maybe a bit shorter because we are only late, but. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is. There's no. No waiting for Lois, I have to do that. And this is for you, and the rest is for me.
Yeah.
And then I'll continue with my presentation.
Yeah. And so, when do I talk about the P2P Foundation?
After my presentation.
After.
Do you have a laptop with the slides or something?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Good morning, everyone. We now start with the opening of the conference. There was a day yesterday, but today I had hoped that a lot of people are here, but unfortunately most of them have been there yesterday, but I think they will come here. At this point I want to thank to the to the local organizers, especially Uwe, who's outside, and Lucy. Just get them inside.
Yeah,
maybe.
I want them, so.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I think some of the helpers are from some local free software groups, Manchester Free Software Group, as I think. And I'm very grateful that we have the support of these people, because otherwise it would not have been possible to have this conference here. And okay, then I would like to ask Michel Bauens to say something about the conference, about the character and things like that.
Thank you. Stefan asked me to say a few things about the the way it was done, and I would just like to actually really highlight Stefan's role, because if you come to a conference like this, there's a kind of a normal reaction, which is kind of to say, this doesn't work, this doesn't work, this doesn't work. There's a number of things that are not organized. But what you have to realize is this is an entirely volunteer project. Nobody's getting paid. As far as I've seen, Stefan has done, I don't know how many percent, but I would say 90-95% of the work. And our name, the P2P Foundation, is on the paper and the posters, but frankly, I because of a number of reasons, I couldn't really participate that much. And so our participation has been minimal compared to what Ökonix has done, especially Stefan. The points that Stefan mentioned here, I'll just read them, done entirely by volunteers. Everything is transparent. I think this is a model, actually, which I really liked is, if you're familiar with the way it was organized, the specialized mailing list for speakers, for helpers, and that was really, I think, very efficient, because if you had any specific problem, you knew which mailing list to ask and to communicate with your similar people. It's a very heavy agenda. I just saw the one today. It's I hope you'll stay and get as much out of it as you can. It says here spontaneous sessions are always possible, but I guess that will have to be after late in the day. Do you have any process that you propose to do that? I mean, that might be an important
process. We have separate rooms for spontaneous sessions. So we want to have a spontaneous session because we want to say something to the people here. Just turn to the conference bureau. they know about spare rooms we have, and they can give you one of these spare rooms and together with the time. And this would be in parallel to the other tracks.
All right. So. Another question is, if you need help for certain things, how do we know that you need help, and how can we say that we want to help you?
I'll talk about
you this. Talk about, all right. All right, sponsors. So there is Rosa Luxemburg Stiftung. I suppose that's something that you did. We had the Platonic, which is a group in Barcelona. We played an expensive plane ticket, and a few private persons. I think that was a result of your appeal at some point, right? Yeah. So what about, is there still need for money, or?
Yeah, you talk about
that too. Well, actually, I've said what Stefan wanted me to say. It was a very short list. I'll come back to you to talk 10 minutes about the P2P Foundation after Stefan has done some practical. Is that okay for you, Stefan?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I will talk about some organizational topics, and then I'll continue with the introduction to Ökonix, and then Michel Bounds talks about the P2P Foundation. one thing we really need is donations. We tried to find funding for this conference, and it was really, really hard, and actually we were not very lucky with finding funding. I mean, we made it possible that the conference happens, but we still need some money, and if I say some money, then I think of 1,000 euros. If we had about 50 registered visitors, so if everyone gives 20 pounds or 20 euros or whatever, then this should be okay. but this is something we really need. We have prepared a box outside at the conference desk, where you can just put in some money. As I said, 20 pounds would be the standard. If it is more, then it is better, because yesterday the university decided to charge us 300 pounds for using that beamer and the beamers in the other. I mean, okay, it came a bit unexpected, but so please, please think about it and please donate some money, because others we have really, we really have a problem. Some organizational things. We have a conference desk outside, and one of the functions of this conference desk is to check in people. There's a list for all the visitors, so we know who was here. just turn to the check-in outside and write you to the list and get one of these name tags, so it is easier to communicate with each other. Also, there's the most recent program. We had a very late change, I think this week. Yeah. This applies to the talk on Sunday morning in the third room, which we have found another speaker who came to know about the conference only through the invitation, and this was a bit late to include him officially, but now he has agreed that he gives a talk, and I think it's a very interesting talk, so you may want to attend it. We have slots of 1.5 hours. The net time of each slot is 1.25 hours, so we have a quarter hour left to change rooms. the default duration for a talk is 45 minutes, so we have half an hour left for discussion. And discussions are very important. This conference is made to have good discussions and made to have speakers really tell what they want to say. So we have relatively long slots, but I think this is really important for a conference like this. Also, I'm not absolutely sure, but I think tonight in the UK they changed to daylight saving time. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. So this night will be 1 hour shorter. Nonetheless, we start at 9 tomorrow morning, so please set up your clocks that you're here on time. We try to get lunch today here on site. It turned out to be too difficult, so we decided that you have to go out somewhere and take something. We will have a okay. Just look to Phoebe. She has a small map where there are some locations.
Very bad. Have you memorized this yet? I'll just basically I'll just go to the table or
yeah.
To the table.
Yeah. 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 Please note that we have only 1 hour of lunch break. 1 hour is very short. And yeah, this is very short. Please try to use a takeaway or something, so you can just wrap the food and maybe just return here or something like that. We start at 2:30 with the second part today. Okay. Yeah, but a supermarket is also a good idea. A supermarket is also a good idea, so people can, yeah, wonderful. We will have dinner, I hope we will have dinner together this evening. We just walked down the Curry Mile, which is quite close. And yesterday evening we find a restaurant which had no problem with 20 people, so maybe we'll find something there. There you have a really good dinner. I think I'm a bit sorry that we were not able to prepare lunch today, but well. What I really would like to remind you again is that we have only 1 hour and it's really short. Please try to be back here at 2:30. Yeah, internet, we have internet available here. you need to get an account and a password. You can get that at, I hope you can get that at the conference desk. I hope they thought of this. Yeah, Yuwei is the one who distributes them, but I don't know whether I hope she's at the conference desk, so. Okay, the conference desk anyway is the central point for any questions about the conference, and people there will try to help you as much as they can. Okay, are there any organizational questions left? This seems to be not the case. Okay. Oh, yes, Borden. Can you put it to a stick and...
Yeah.
You find a way. So, okay, now for my presentation about some important things about Equinox, about Equinox thinking, mostly. I called this, maybe you've heard of a guy called Barack Obama, and I think, well, maybe a bit controversial, but I think what he really does good is to have slogans, and so I borrowed some slogans from him. what I will try to outline in this talk is a bit about the Equinox project, then why peer production is so interesting. In the third part, I will try to outline why there's a real chance that peer production gets even more important in the future. and I will close with a short peek into this future. First, I would like to say something about the Equinox project. This is really only one slide. Equinox is a combination, actually, Ökonomie und Linux, which is economy and Linux. This is a German word combination. this is what we started with, but this is what we started with, a discussion process around free software about this very interesting phenomenon. Ökonomx has been founded in 1999. We have a wide range of participants there from science, from activists, free software people, everybody. What we have in common is that we have an interest in emancipation. Meanwhile, we moved on from free software exclusively to peer production as a more general phenomenon. If I say peer production, then I think of, for instance, Wikipedia or open access or countless other initiatives which are quite similar to free software. the whole project is a virtual project. It consists of a few mailing lists. Meanwhile, the English mailing list, the English discussion mailing list, is the most important one. We have websites, we have a wiki, of course, and it is always great if new people join into the discussion there. This is only a very short, some very short information about what Equinox is actually. Now I want to say something about the things we developed in Equinox. This is just a very short introduction. There are a lot of things we thought about, a lot of thoughts we had. I think these are the two most important ones which I'm not going to talk about. when I'm saying that what we see in peer production is a new mode of production, then probably some of you don't have an idea what a mode of production is actually. what we see when we look at free software, people think, oh well, this is technology, but there's also a common feeling that there's something special about it. Anyway, it's not only technology, it's different beyond technology. And that was the starting point for Equinox to look at free software or to peer production as a fundamental societal phenomenon which is happening there. When we talk of a mode of production, then we think of a mode of production as something how this society reproduces itself. Some important features of a mode of production are the products which are used and the means of production which are used, the embedding of the production process into society, and the productivity. When we think of a mode of production, it's really the fundament of a society. This is only the concept. I have examples for modes of production. Actually, we have feudalism, where we had a certain mode of production. This was determined by agricultural productions and peasants and artisans. We had more or less personal relations in communities. We had something like aristocracy, and we had a quite low productivity. Another example for a mode of production is, of course, capitalism. We have industrial production, we have workers, which are very different from artisans and peasants. We have relationships which are based on exchange, an abstract exchange, which is usually done by money. We have something like democracy, and we have a higher productivity than in feudalism. So if you look at these two examples, you can see that a mode of production really reaches society very much. So if we talk of a new mode of production and peer production, then we basically say that this new mode of production will shape a new society, which will be very different from capitalism over this, if you look, well, maybe 100 years into the future. To give you some reasons why we see peer production as a new mode of production, I tried to, I prepared this table where I compare a few aspects which we see in capitalism on the one hand and in peer production on the other hand. One of these aspects is the flow of goods. I mean in a society, in a modern society which is based on the division of labor, you need to have a flow of goods, otherwise it just wouldn't work. In capitalism, we have property and abstract exchange. In peer production, we have an unhindered flow of goods. Free software, for instance, just flows to those points where the particular free software is needed. People just take it. we also can compare on the level of things. In capitalism, we have inside the companies, we have a system of command and control. The bosses control what the workers do, and they say to them what they have to do. In peer production, we have volunteers and we have maintainers. Maintainers fulfill some functions of a boss, but they are working with volunteers, and you can't command volunteers. If you try to force volunteers to do one thing or the other, then they just leave the project. So a maintainer has to be very careful with his volunteers, otherwise they just leave and he is alone, and this doesn't make sense for a project. The third aspect I want to highlight is the reason to contribute. In capitalism, we have alienated reasons to contribute. We have alienated reasons to work. And this reason is namely to earn money. In peer production, the reason to contribute is that you enjoy the task and also enjoy the project. That is the reason why you contribute, it's the reason why you volunteer for a project. Also, it's very different if you look at the societal versus the individual utility. In capitalism, these are separated into different spheres. You have to work, and this is for societal utility, and your individual utility you have in your free time. In peer production, these are directly intertwined. You contribute to your project because you want to do it, so you do it in your free time, and at the same time, this is useful for the society as a whole, so there's also a big difference. There are more aspects, but I think you now can get an idea why we think that we have really a new mode of production compared to cooperativism here. And this is also the reason why where I would say with Barack Obama, because of other reasons, but yes, we can. We have really something here which can bring us to another future, to another future society. I talked about enjoying the task and the project, and this is what we call with the German word Selbstentfaltung. We try to find an English word for it, but we're not very successful with that, so we stick to Selbstentfaltung. And this is in any instance, this is the opposite of action. Selbstentfaltung has two basic characteristics. On the one hand, it is, to say it shortly, it is to have fun as an individual. But on the other hand, you maintain a relationship to society. This is also the reason why we didn't use the term self-realization, because self-realization is usually only a very individual thing, which you do and then you have self-realized, but there's no impact on society. What we mean by Selbstentfaltung is to have fun individually, but also to have a relationship to society, like we see in free software. An important expression for Selbstentfaltung is to volunteer for useful tasks. One of the results of this type of activity, or this reason to become active, is that it is that it aims at absolute quality. If it is your baby, if you are involved in a project which you really like, then you want to be proud of it. And the good thing is that in peer production there's no boss or no marketing department which is stopping you from that. If you have worked for a company, then you might have made the experience that you thought, well, it could be done better, but you were not allowed to do it better because it's for the competition, it is complex sufficient to do it that way. In peer production, nobody stops you from doing that. And I think this is really the reason why peer products are getting so successful. It is the quality of these products which makes them successful. This is, I think, the very basic reason. Otherwise, we wouldn't see free software. I mean, that people use free software has nothing to do, or little to do, with the price of free software, which is zero normally, but with the quality of free software. Okay, this was something about a new mode of production and what is special about it. The second thing I wanted to say is why we can believe that there's really a change going on. And for this I want to outline shortly a theory which is called the germform theory, and I will tell you what this means. What is a germform? A germform has three characteristics. It's structurally new. It is that means that it is different from what exists already. It emerges from the old and exists in the old. That is, for instance, what we see in free software. It emerged from the old, and it still exists in the old, and the old is also using it. I'll come to this back later. And it has the potential to take over. These are three key characteristics which we which germform needs to have. And the germform theory now explains how fundamental change takes place. This theory has been developed for psychology, but I think it's also valid to look at it for historical processes like we are witnessing at the moment. part of the germ form theory is something which is called the five-step model, which describes how a germ form develops in history. The first step is that the new emerges. If you think of free software, then think of the early 80s, where free software started to exist. Think of Richard Stallman or so. In these times, in these very early times of a germ form, it's hard to even recognize it. I mean, free software in 1985 was only recognized as software by some experts. But it became, it took 15 years that free software was recognized in a broader public. That was about 1998. So the first step, it's really hard to even recognize the germ form. A second point which is important for the five-step model is the crisis of the old. Well, usually at this point I had said, well, capitalism is in crisis already. It is not very visible at the moment, but well, we have 1 year later, a few months later, and we have a major financial crisis. And I think everyone can see that capitalism is in a crisis, actually. And we need, for a germ form to become more important, to become dominant, you need the crisis of the old. Because if the old is still fine, then there's no need for something new. The third step is a step where the germ form disseminates and expands. And this is actually where in the software industry we are in at the moment. this free software is an important thing in the old process, in capitalism. Internet, for instance, would not run without free software. Just would not run. The key question at this point is, can the germ form keep its germ form features, especially can it keep that it's structurally new, or is it absorbed somehow by the old system? I think for peer production, there's good hope that it can't be absorbed, because you can't force volunteers, for instance. And it's hard to bribe them with money or something like that. So there are a couple of reasons why peer production, as we see it at the moment, cannot be absorbed by capitalism. The fourth step is that the germ form achieves dominance slowly. And the fifth step is then that the whole system is restructured according to the demands of the new form. and again, I stick to Barack Obama, who said change and believe. And I think if you look at this five-step model, you can see, and if you look at history of capitalism, for instance, then you can identify the steps where capitalism ran through these five steps. Meanwhile, of course, the whole system is restructured to the needs of capitalism. And what you can see is that this model actually applies in history. So I think there's really reason to believe that this change can really take place. this was the second important thing, the second important thought of openness I would like to talk about. Now I will give you a short peek into the future. I mean, well, if I now give a short peek into the future, then we have to be careful, of course, because in times like this, when a new era is starting, actually, you cannot foresee what is happening. I mean, if you think of, say, 1800 or so, when capitalism was very new, you could not have foreseen what 200 years later is actually the case, which is completely new, normal for us. I think in 1800 or so, even in 1850, you would not have been able to think this, to think what is normal to us today. Always a bit difficult to, with this peek into the future. But still there are some more abstract, more conceptual things, which I think can be said. The utopia, in the utopia, the Selbstentfaltung, or what you can, with good reasons, call freedom, is no longer a contradiction to society as it is today. It's rather its fundament. What we will see in this utopia is that there's even more automation than today, because automation reduces tasks which are not wanted by people. And of course, as we see in peer production, all goods are freely available. I know this is hard to imagine, but I think if you look at peer production, especially in free software, you will see that it works. such an utopia is overcoming of the labor society as we know it at the moment. And with labor society, I mean, the labor society is 200 years or maybe 250 years old. So it's nothing which is given by nature somehow, and it can be replaced by another type of society. We would have no commodities anymore, no labor, no exchange, no money. This is the hardest thing to imagine, life without money. And we would also have no, or at least less alienation than today. I think what we really see here is the dawn, or what we are witnessing at the moment, is the dawn of a new, of a free society. I think these are very interesting times to live in. normally at this point the question pops up, well, but there are physical goods. How do you produce physical goods? There are a couple of answers to that. In my talk yesterday I tried to give a few ideas about that. But in this talk I want to draw your attention to another point. I want to show you what restructuring of the whole society can mean. And for this I usually use the historical example of capitalism and agricultural production. Feudalism was based on agricultural production. It was key in feudalism, and of course agricultural production still exists. It's still the basis of mankind, of course. But in the process of restructuring, the capitalism restructured all of society to its demands. Agricultural production became an appendage of industrial production. And so what you see is that the focus of the society moved from agricultural production to industrial production. And agriculture, and if you now think of physical products from peer production, you can think of a similar change. that material production or physical production becomes an appendage of information production. And we already see some aspects which point in this direction. Information already is an important precondition for material production. Just take a normal company which produces some physical things and take out all the computers. It wouldn't work. It just wouldn't work. Automation is already on a very high degree, and information is a key concept in automation. So we see already that that this information production becomes more and more important. And I think today, as I outlined this yesterday, I think the key question today is the availability of the means of production, especially machinery, and maybe also human means of production. So finally, I think that the restructuring process, which is part of the five-step model, will remove material production from the focus. It will still exist, of course, then it has to be, it has to exist, but it will not be in the focus anymore. Okay, that was what I wanted to say, a short summary. I tried to explain that peer production or peer economy, if you like, establishes a new mode of production, that germ form theory shows how this type of production can develop in the future and has developed in the past. And I actually think that we are witnessing the dawn of a new era. Okay, thank you for your attention. Of course, you can go to the project, and if you like to, you can subscribe to the mailing list and contribute to the discussions. Questions and comments, I think, are after Michelle's talk. So at this point, a lot of thanks for your attention.
Thank you. So I'm going to do it a little differently than Stefan, which talked only a little bit about Ökonux as an organization and really gave a substantial speech about the theory behind Ökonux. I will do that on Sunday morning, right, on the 29th in the morning. It will be called Political Implications of Peer-to-Peer. This is where I'll kind of present some kind of more theoretical framework. So here I only want to talk about P2P Foundation, who we are, what we do, etc. First thing is the beginning. You know, the St. Paul on the road to Damascus, and then he gets some lightning, I guess, on his head, and that's the basis of a change in his life. So for me, I think it was the three things that kind of triggered the change. I was working in a large business, very large telecommunications company. And okay, the first thing was, before I joined this company, I was an internet entrepreneur, and we had the internet bubble. And was it April 2000 or April 2001? I don't remember exactly. But the fact was that when the bubble burst, 90% of the commentary was saying this is the end of internet innovation. More venture capital, there's no more investment. It's going to slow down. And in some ways it did. There was an exodus of people outside of internet companies, San Francisco, the whole neighborhood, an internet neighborhood became empty. You saw internet former internet designers traveling around the world in South America and taking a year off because they were kind of depressed after the failure of so many companies. But something very strange happened at that time, which was that actually innovation didn't slow down. It speeded up. And this was a very weird thing to witness. So there's no more money. Everybody's saying innovation is going to slow down. And what happened after a year or a year and a half, we had Web 2.0, which was based on an enormous amount of integrated and congruent innovation. So something was happening there. And I was asking myself, what is it? Well, how can you explain that innovation is happening and even speeding up at a time where capital is going out of the system and money is going out of the system? So this was kind of a first trigger. The second trigger, and here I have to be careful, I hope this is not taped. So I won't name names, but let's say I was working for a big organization and I really realized, because I had a strategy, that the accounting systems of large capitalist organizations were totally, totally based on fiction. I basically today I'm convinced that the Soviet planning figures were more reliable than any annual report that you can read today. And I think one of the reasons is that the stock market based evaluation of immaterial value does not work. It becomes a political game of expectations. It can be rigged, and that's what they've been doing for the last 20 years. So basically what I witnessed on a small scale, it's what the realization that Enron and WorldCom were not exceptions, but actually were the rule of how things were functioning in that system, because I had never been on such a high level before in my career. And the third thing, I guess, was more like an environmental awakening. Just seeing that all the indicators of our society, resource depletion, climate change, they were all going negative. I mean, if you look at the World Watch Institute reports, there's just nothing that's going the right direction. There's a few exceptions, but anyway. So this kind of triggered kind of a change and kind of decided basically to quit my business career, to take a sabbatical, start rereading, which you don't have time if you're in business. Wrote a manuscript about peer-to-peer, and in 2006 created the first of the online platforms. So what we want to do basically is two things. A priori, it's kind of librarianship, I would say, documenting what is happening in the world, and then a posteriori, pattern recognition. What can we see that is happening, and how can we make sense of it? And out of that, kind of build a theory of what is happening around peer-to-peer. And of course, that's how then we discovered Econux, and we have a lot of similarities and some differences. So I think it's a new way of doing politics, because one way of doing politics is say, okay, this is the world we want, and then imagine how this world could function. I think it's legitimate. I have nothing against utopian exercise. But I think there's another way, which is to see what are communities doing? How are they actually solving their problems, recognizing the patterns, and then try to interrelate the patterns? And so this is basically what we try to do at the P2P funding. So we have a wiki. And the wiki has, I think today, I should check, but I think 9,000 pages of documentations. So we use peer production, peer governance, and peer property as our three main areas of interest in every area of social life. So if you want to know about open yoga or open Reiki, free software, open access, citizen science, all of these things you will find in the wiki in appropriate subject domains. So we're kind of building a huge database of what is actually happening on the ground, you know, through actually really existing social practice. So whenever somebody tells me, you know, you're utopian, I say there's nothing utopian about the work we are doing. It's observing what is happening, and observing with self-reflection and critique. So it's not about, you know, kind of ideology of saying, you know, everything is fine, everything is working. No. If you're familiar with the P2P Foundation wiki, you will see the structures of describing the problem and then observing the controversies within the field. So there's always a discussion area where we can find it, where we put, you know, what people are experiencing, the foreign, you know, the kind of discussion happening in the community around that particular topic. So if you read Citizen Science or Wikipedia, yes, you will find people saying Wikipedia is great, but you will also find in our wiki the people saying Wikipedia sucks. And why does it suck? And, you know, what are the controversies about the governance issues in Wikipedia? So it's really, of course, we have a bias. And the bias is we are for peer-to-peer. So what I try to do is make a difference between observing, respecting the facts, making an ethical judgment. So it's being open and transparent about your own values. Yes, I like peer-to-peer, we like peer-to-peer. And on that basis, then develop a praxis, what works and what doesn't. You know, how can we advance what we like within the existing society? So the wiki, for the wiki we use something called opportunistic updating. So I guess in terms of piracy, we steal 99% of our content, right? But we do that in a fair use way, which is selecting from any text that we choose a significant paragraph or two, and then pointing people to the original source so they can look for more. The blog is just a means of kind of, you know, the showing what is happening today, showing the debates as they happen, more or less in real time. We have a forum at Ning, which is basically more appropriate for discussions within our community. It's better designed for, you know, replies and threads and that kind of stuff. So we have the Ning community. We have an active mailing list, which is called Peer-to-Peer Research, and which is basically a mixture of announcements and discussion, depending on the, you know, if people are in the mood of having discussion or not. It's a very heavy mailing list, fairly heavy, I think 5 to 9 items per day. So you have to know that, but you can take a digest if you like. What else do we have? We have an active, delicious network under my name, Delicious /unbounce, which has, I think, 30,000 tags, finely grained, organized around peer-to-peer economics, peer-to-peer politics, peer-to-peer spirituality, peer-to-peer business, peer-to-peer, you know, whatever, it's there. All right, so a few things that I would like to say about, you know, what's working and what's not working. So I think there is a tension between the collective and the individual being me. You know, some people are more than others able to merge into a community. I think for me that's a little bit difficult. I think I might take too much place. That might discourage some other people, or, you know, to contribute. Because I think an important part of participating in production is mutual recognition, is reputation, and etc. But I do my best to, you know, get people in and showing what they do, etc., etc. So I think one thing I want to say to you, if you have any project that you want to spread around, you know, in the open and free, participatory, and commons-oriented communities in the world, please tell me. I can give you a password to the wiki, you can have a password for the blog, and sometimes it really works. You know, we have 7 million page views in the wiki, 20,000 page views in the blog per month. So I can never predict if a particular item will kind of, you know, gel, but I think a few people here can say that at least at some point in their evolution, the fact that they were mentioned in our resources really made a difference, kind of, you know, broaden the scale of the knowledge of their projects and allow them to grow maybe faster than we have without us. So this is something we want to do. So what we want to do basically is showing people what we are doing, right? And showing the interconnections between what we are doing. And in other words, being the grease of the movement. Just put a little bit grease in the... so that we can learn from our mistakes, learn from our successes, learn what are successful patterns, etc., etc. Okay, here a wish list, what I would like to do in the future. Because I wasn't making any money, I have a job again, so I'm a wage slave, and I'm actually happy to have a monthly income. So there's some good about it. but I may have less time than before to maintain the resource base of the P2P funding. So first thing is, you know, if you feel so inclined and you feel creative about creating content and sharing content, please let me know. We will need people. If you want the same rhythm of publication, we will need some people. Developers, we have almost no developers. So no technical, that's a really problem for us. So we have mostly people who deal in ideas. There might be practitioners in various fields, but we have very few developers. I give you an example of what could be done. So if you take any subject domain in our resource base, we have, let's say, peer-to-peer politics, right? We have a section in the wiki, we have a section in the blog, we have a section in Delicious, and they're not integrated. So for example, I would love to create portals to the different subject domains where you would find everything coming together in your particular field of interest. I think if we would have that, you know, I could probably triple or even more the audience that we have, because it would be presented in a better way and in a more specialized way to specialized interests. Another thing I would like to, this is really a wish list, so, you know, I'm kind of broadcasting it, is I'll give you an example. This is a big difference we have with Econix. So we believe in distributed monetary systems, in social production of money. And there are multiple dozens of projects out there, and despite all the internet, they're not talking to each other, right? And all of them need a common basis, you know, identification, authentication, verification, trust. I mean, there's really, you know, if you would think of it, it's probably 70% of what they want to do is common, right? But unlike the free software world, somehow they're not doing it together. So I think we need a platform, and this could be the P2P Foundation, where you could say, okay, let's set them together, yeah. Let's pay their tickets and lodging. Let's have a process whereby they can decide together what is the 70% we have in common. And then they can decide to work together, and then the 30% where they're different from other people, they could still do on their own, right? But this thing happens in every field. Distributed energy, distributed manufacturing, distributed monetary system. I think we really need platforms. It could be another one, but this is something that I think we need to do and that I would like to contribute to. I've been talking with two ladies, Atina and Phoebe, who are sitting there, hoping that we can create an association of peer-to-peer researchers. I think this is also a very important thing, which is basically for academics who do research, scientific research, on peer production, peer governance, peer property, and associated subjects that we can semi-institutionalize it, find funding, and augment the knowledge base around peer production and peer-to-peer. So again, if you're interested, you can talk to me, you can talk to Atina and Phoebe, and see how we can advance that. I think, all right, so that's it. Thank you very much for having the occasion to present our project, and we'll have a discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, short one. Yeah, I think we have time. Well, this is a bit. We started a bit late, so I think we are all on minutes for discussion. I'm sorry for that, but we have a packed program. Any questions? Any comments?
Okay. Can you discuss more some of the plans for bringing the people who don't talk to each other together?
Well, that's really like a wish list. What I would like to have is find. Funding, maybe from foundation, like the Source Foundation, or anything that would allow us to do that, and have, let's say an annual conference that each time would be dedicated to another team, and that would kind of the theme would be how can we advance distributed manufacturing, how can we advance distributed monetary system, how can we advance a more peer-to-peer communication infrastructure, and so we. Sweep the different subject fields, bring people together. And I think the P2P Foundation in particular, we're very well placed to do that because we, through the observing of all these initiatives, we actually know probably better than most other people who's doing what. So the mapping has already been done. But we don't have the means to bring the people together physically. And it's very important, despite all the virtual, that we have physical meetings because, right, once you meet each other, it's different. You can ask things. That you can ask if you never have met. So once people meet 3 days together, it really changed the whole dynamic of that particular community. They start interacting in a really different way. They know each other. It becomes personal. And things just go so much faster once it's been done. So we need an infrastructure that allows us to do that, that brings all these various people together around common interests and common practical paths.
About what you say, I think the problem that you mentioned about not communicating projects and organizations and all that stuff is a technical thing. And I think what people like to do in their language, which we have a body, have work. But now we have 1.0 version of Power. Power is a virtual machine that we can everywhere. This is the way to solve the technical problem you mentioned.
I have a question for Stefan. In your German factor five-state model, I found you, in the way you applied it, there is the easy part that is going all the way till now, like the first, in many domains we are at the first step of the intermingling between the old system and new forms and the big issue of protecting and maturing the substance of the emerging system in this situation. And then when you go to the risk restoring part, it becomes lots of your open issues. And so the question is basically, I was a bit afraid that by stamping a particular vision of what this restructuring will be, you're weakening the power of the overall model. Because, for example, I believe that the age of information will be a new golden age of material production. And agriculture and things like that. And, maybe it's the same thing that you mean when you say to become but maybe it's a totally different thing. And I think it's important, since these are open issues, I mean, even among people who share many similar values, it would be better to keep them more open as questions.
I mean, you're absolutely right. There are a lot of open issues, of course, but if you think of capitalism, when capitalism started, there were also a lot of open issues. And this new mode of production managed to give answers to these open issues. So I'm very confident that this will happen for peak production also.
In your model transition, as power shifts to a new group, it's not necessarily a good thing for humanity, is it? Agriculture becomes an appendage of industry. You say industry becomes an appendage of the information society. Well, it kind of has happened already, hasn't it? It's a question of who's excluded. And when the shift from agrarian to industrial capitalism happened, it was the peasants that were sacrificed. And now it actually is the industrial workers that are sacrificed. Like all this tech that's here is made by very, very low wage hyper-exploiting labour, and it's predicated on the existence of heavily exploited labour, and it's used to exploit labour even more than it is. So what I'm saying is, the question I'm raising is, how are we going to address this issue of equality? Like, this is really the thing that wasn't tackled in the Industrial Revolution. Like, if one just thinks, one trusts that things will evolve in a more egalitarian way for some reason, then I think those who have power will exclude those who have less power. Just to be brief, I think there's a very big source of hope in all this, which I hope other people are looking at as well, is the role of some sort of inclusive, obviously democracy. An inclusive kind of planning approach to planning. Terribly crude, but actually very much more effective than the government's planning. When you bring everybody involved in who's affected by a problem together and get there, the results can be staggering and productive and produce great abundance. And the person whose work I'm doing at the moment is a stack of beer. The upper operation of the search can help achieve the government in 1971.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a valid question whether there are groups of people which are excluded by such a movement in society. Actually, I can't see them at the moment. So. I don't know, maybe in capitalism, when capitalism came about, this was certainly the case, that you have the peasants which have been excluded and have been transformed to workers. And that was actually a really aggressive and cruel time at that time. But at the moment, I don't see this in this transition.
I think that there's a new hierarchy between the people who are capable of producing computer systems for the developers and that administrative capability or people who don't. Web 2.0 is very crude, and you can't really change the whole system. You can do a little bit, and that's a mass system. If you look at complicated technical systems where there's a lot of expertise, there is a difference between the people who have that knowledge. So are you saying everybody should become a hacker to master this tool? I mean, I'm curious as to how that works.
Well, I think the good news is if this vision becomes reality, that all needs of people are cared for. So this is so I see at least at this point no exclusion. But of course you are right. You need a lot of expertise, for instance, to write software. But this is, I think, a feature of modern society. Modern society is a very complex thing, and with lots of complex aspects. And we need, of course, people which master these aspects, which have the expertise to master these aspects. And actually, I don't think that it is viable in any way that everyone can master these. But I think most people are able to master some of this. So, in a way, everybody can be an expert in some field.
Have a lot of people not connected to internet.
This applies more or less to the Northwest, yeah. Yeah, but the capitalist property is something different than feudalist property. But I think you are right. I mean, very early of capitalism, you can see a Roman Empire even. But this is the emerging phase, you know.
And that's what's having the information, people's occupation. They've got their own property, and they've got physical goods. That's what they've got their information.
Well, as I try to,
can I give you an example? I think it can. Today, give you an example, really a concrete example of the difference that it can make. So, in the 70s, we had lots of renewable energy companies in California. We had electric cars. We had basically a lot of the things that we need today to fight global warming and ecological disruption. We were developing it. The oil companies were bought up, all these companies. I know because I was working for British Petroleum. And they basically closed them down, not because they said we want to kill them. You know, they said it's not economically viable. But still, the practical result was because of property that once these companies closed down, the scientific innovation became in effect unusable for the next generation. It created basically 30 years of stagnation. Right now, the good news is, despite all the flaws of the Obama administration, that Dr. Chu, who is the climate guy, said we need open innovation for clean energy. I mean, this is really hugely significant, because the difference is that any innovation that we'll make, just as the model is in free software, becomes available for everybody. So even if a company goes bust, you know, the innovation can continue. I'm just showing you as an example of how this template of practice actually does solve water and all kinds of problems. Yes. Yeah. I think for me the tension is between mainstream industrial society, which is no longer functioning for our planet and for humanity, and emerging alternatives, and the lack of connection between the two. Right? If even today the mass of the people, if they react to the crisis, they will ask higher wages or but they will ask things that do not change the fundamental logic of the system. And I think what the three participatory and commons-oriented movements are doing is actually building the solutions. And at this time, we don't have the connection between the active minority who are building and creating templates of future economies and politics, and a mainstream society which is kind of collapsing. And this is the issue, I think.
Thank you.
I think, well, one last question. But
yeah, it's a view from the outside. I mean, if someone steps in there and he says, look, what are those people talking about on the time scale? They're talking about capitalism and post-capitalism, and they're talking about Bush versus Barack Obama. These are very, very different levels. So the new age that starts with Obama is very different from the new age that starts with a completely contrary concept of peer construction. So my advice would be to be a little bit careful about these sort of rhetorical ploys.
But they are still nice slogans, aren't they? Okay. I think we have to close here. Dante? We need your laptop, and there was, I think, Matthew with another laptop for recording the sessions. Is Matthew here? Okay. Okay. And I think the next talk is of Christian here in this room. Maybe we should start, well, 10 minutes later than the schedule, but we have to keep the schedule afterwards. Okay, thank you.
Where
are the other folks?
Just around there.
Okay, question. I need an adapter. I'm helping out Marcin over there. Okay. It's for Canon. Camera, I'm on the
okay.
Video.
I think we need this for the laptop, which is great.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll just charge in between.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I have one for the laptop.